This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So good afternoon. Good to see you all here. Welcome to this workshop. I realize that when you think of cross-cultural communication, there's a lot of different ways that you could approach it. I'm going to be approaching it primarily from the aspect of going into another culture as a Christian worker and trying to communicate or trying to share the gospel with them or going with that purpose. So, as they said, living in New York, we have lots of opportunities just to interact on a daily basis, on a business level or on any other level cross-culturally. But I'm going to be looking primarily at going into another culture or going to New York City and trying to communicate cross-culturally with the purpose of sharing the gospel. Living in Grenada gave me opportunity to learn cross-cultural communication. Living in New York gives me that opportunity. I also had the privilege of traveling to India, to China, to Thailand. And that was more just like short-term, a week or so, a couple weeks. And I'm going to be sharing stories. I hope you like stories because I'm going to be sharing stories because I remember stories. And my purpose in sharing stories is not just story time with Joel, but rather it's stories so that you can learn the principles of what I'm trying to share through story. And because of having friends in different places and having lived in different places, there are times that I'll be sharing things that I did well and things that I didn't do so well. There'll be other times I'll be sharing stories and intentionally not telling you who it was because I don't want you to know who it is. We know friends in a variety of places that I've never even been to, so don't try to figure out who it is, okay? That's not the point of who it is as much as what happened. If I tell you who it is, it's probably me, both good and bad. As I started studying for this workshop, I realized that in my description that I laid out way more information that I could cover in 45 minutes. So I'm going to be looking primarily at character qualities that are essential for cross-cultural communication. So I'll be giving you examples of how I learned patience or I didn't demonstrate patience. I'm not going to be looking so much at the five aspects of communication, which was in my description of what I said I was going to be looking at. Primarily be looking at the character qualities that I believe are really necessary if you're going to communicate cross-culturally and be heard in a way that you can understand. Because when you communicate in a different or across cultural lines, communicate cross-culturally, there's a lot of opportunities to be misunderstood, a lot of opportunities to be missed completely, where you say one thing and that's not at all what they heard or not at all at least what they interpreted you to say. I'm going to be looking at 1 Corinthians 13, which we know is the love chapter, and I'll be pulling some different aspects, character qualities that I'm pulling from those verses that I think demonstrate the need in cross-cultural communication, demonstrate abilities or help us to be able to communicate in a way that people will be able to understand the message that we're trying to communicate. Because ultimately, when we go into another culture, I want to be able to communicate the love of Jesus, the message that God has given us through his word. And if my delivery is wrong, or if the message that I give is right, but the way I present it is wrong, they're not going to hear what we want them to hear. So I think if we have, it's about five character qualities that I want to look at. If we have those, they will help us in the art of cross-cultural communication. We know 1 Corinthians 13 is a love chapter, and love is the overarching character quality that we need. I'm going to come back to that at the end, but Paul lays the foundation, says basically, if you have all this stuff but you don't have love, you missed it. And I will say, this is maybe somewhat of a spoiler alert, but I'll come back to it at the end. But if you don't have love, I don't care how well you can communicate, you're not going to be able to share the gospel in a way that people will understand if you don't have love. I'll come back to that at the end, but I thought I'd give that at the beginning because it is overall what Paul is talking about here. The first three verses of 1 Corinthians 13, Paul kind of lays the foundation. He's like, you know, if I could speak the perfect language, I could speak the language of angels, if I have all these different things, but if I don't have love, I'm nothing. And as I was thinking of that, was the first character quality I want to look at that is not listed in those first three verses, but the character quality of humility. I list that one first. And again, love is the overarching one, but outside of love, I think humility is foundational in being able to communicate the gospel cross-culturally. Because if you go into another culture and you have all the answers, it won't be long before you will lose the respect of people. As I look at Scripture, I see lots of examples. But one primary example of demonstrating humility, and that's in the life of Jesus. Philippians 2 says that Jesus humbled himself and became a servant. And I see those two really as together. Showing humility will be demonstrated in being a servant. So as I think of Jesus' example, he had everything, but he left it all to become one of us. So I start with humility as the first character quality that I'm going to look at. You know, when you go into another culture, you're coming in basically as a nobody. And that's an asset or a liability, depending on how you want to look at it. But it takes humility to start at the bottom. It takes humility to recognize that I don't have all the answers. It takes humility to realize that, you know what? They don't realize that. They don't know that my dad is the owner of a $100 million company. He's not, okay? That was hypothetical. But it takes humility to be a nobody. The liability comes in when I say it's both an asset or a liability. A liability is if you come into a culture as a nobody and you realize I'm going to have to prove myself and I'm going to show them that I am somebody, and you come in and you think you have all the answers, but you don't demonstrate that you're willing to learn, you will lose their respect very quickly. Sometimes we go into another culture and we tend to think that by default our culture is the best. And let me stop here just for a moment. So we're talking about cross-cultural communication. How would you define your culture? Let's define culture just a little bit. How would you define your culture, Ben? I'll pick on you because you're in the front. He'll never sit in the front again, right?
Do you mean there's sort of my Mennonite culture?
Okay, let's start with Mennonite culture. How would you define your Mennonite culture?
It values family. It's generally pretty tight-knit.
Okay, so it values family. It's generally pretty tight-knit. But that's fairly general yet. Anyone else? Help him out. How would you define your culture?
Having it together.
Ooh, having it together. It's kind of hard to describe your culture, right? Because our culture is what's normal for us. I don't know how to describe my culture other than just the normal way that I would do things. Now, you gave a couple descriptions of like valuing family. That's one aspect of our culture. But today, our culture is so vast that I don't know how to describe it other than just the normal way that I do things. But when you go into another culture and things aren't the way that you're used to doing them, then you're like, something's wrong here or something's different here. Hopefully you use the word different instead of wrong, because you're like, this is not the way I'm used to. The problem is when we go into another culture and we're like, my culture is the best. There's a problem here. That's a problem. The attitude is a problem. Humility goes into another culture and says, you know what? I don't have it all together. I need to learn. I don't understand this culture. And it takes humility to start at the bottom and start learning and asking questions. I think one of the most damaging things you can do as a cross-cultural worker, and I'm going to clarify a few terms here. I'm going to use missionary, cross-cultural worker, or Christian worker. I'm going to use those interchangeably. I tend to shy away from the missionary term because sometimes it has a negative connotation. But you go into another culture as a Christian worker, as a cross-cultural worker, and you go in with the attitude that your culture is superior, that's going to be a problem. I was going somewhere else with that thought, and I forgot where I was. Starting at the bottom takes humility. This is where I was going. When you come in with the attitude that I'm here to teach you and you listen to me because I'm the missionary, that's a problem. That's not demonstrating humility. I have a good friend in another country. He told me one time when I was talking with him, he's like, there was this young guy came into his culture, as a missionary, this other person came in, was about 10 years younger than him in a culture that valued age. So along with age came the certain thing of respect. And I feel a little bit awkward here because I have some gray hair in this audience. Men that are older than me and have more age and experience. But in this particular culture, my friend, he's like, there's this young guy comes in, at least 10 years younger than him, has been a Christian about the same age, and has told him, in essence, is, I'm the missionary, you need to listen to me. That didn't go down well, because the person coming in did not demonstrate humility. They came in with all the answers. What does humility look like? It goes in asking questions, for one. Another thing, and this blew me away the first time I saw it, humility will recognize when we've done wrong. And the thing that blew me away, the first time I was at, I'll start over. I was in another country, and I was attending a revival meeting. I don't remember what the message was at night. I don't even remember who the speaker was. But the thing that stood out to me was there was an altar call given, and it was not a salvation invitation, but it was just an altar call for recognizing their needs in my life, and I need someone to pray for me. The first person to respond was a missionary pastor. That blew me away because I had never seen in my life a pastor saying, I have needs in my life. Would you please pray for me? Did my respect for that pastor go down or go up? What do you think? It went up gigantically because he had the humility to recognize, I have a need in my life. I was at a youth night one night in Grenada. We did youth night twice a month, typically. Invite youth from the community in, do activities, Bible story, etc. And there was a group of young people sitting outside under the mango tree around the picnic table. And there was a particular guy and a girl that were really misbehaving. The girl was hanging over the guy, and I told him on no uncertain terms that they need to stop. They're not married. They need to stop that kind of action. And my choice of words was wrong. My attitude was certainly wrong. Later on, I was like, I was wrong. So I went back to the young man and apologized, and I told him, I'm sorry for the way I handled that situation. I publicly called him out, which I wasn't sorry for telling them to stop what they were doing, but my attitude and my approach was wrong. And I went back and said, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? And he did over the course, and he talked about the attitude or the dialogue that some of the guys had related to that conversation. But over the months that followed that, my respect among that group of men went up because I was willing to say, I'm sorry. I could give you other examples when I probably didn't recognize and didn't ask for forgiveness. But the problem comes in when Satan tries to get us to believe that if you go in and recognize that you don't have all the answers, after all, you are the missionary, right? You are the Christian worker. You're supposed to have the answers. If you go in and say, well, I actually don't know that. I need your help. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Satan tries to get us to think that they're going to think less of us. Max Lucado has a quote. He says he believes that Satan goes around training battalions of demons to whisper one thing in our ear. What do people think of you? When it comes to humility, I believe that Satan is trying to do everything he can to not be humble, to not admit when we're wrong. Humility will admit when you're wrong. There's another Christian worker that lived in a foreign country. That person used intimidation and fear to control their people. He had little or no respect among both the missionary staff and among the local people. Finished his term, left the country, went back to his home country, not with a good reputation. I'm sorry. That makes me sad when I hear that. And I think it was by not demonstrating humility. There was a lack of humility, and it caused a problem. Nick Ripken has a book titled The Insanity of God, and he talks about, in his book, he tells a story of how he's traveling around through Muslim background countries, or countries are primarily Muslim, and he was interviewing Christians that were living in this particular country. And he visited five different locations in this particular country with different groups of Christians in this predominantly Muslim country. And he asked them, he's like, tell me, Nick at the time, Nick is his pen name. I don't know his real name. Nick at the time was not living in this particular country, but was helping to facilitate Christian work there. He asked these local believers, like, tell me what makes a good worker, a good Christian worker from the West? Or he didn't use the word missionary, but what makes a good missionary? Paraphrase. And so the men think a bit at the first location, and they're like, we don't really know who, or we don't really know what makes a good Christian worker, but we can tell you one person that we love. And they listed a particular foreign worker's name. And Nick pressed him a bit, like, why do you love him? He's like, we don't really know, but we love him. So he just wrote in his journal, we love him. He goes to the second location, other interviews. At the end of the interview, asks the same question, what makes a good Christian worker from the West? And these men, they think for a bit, and they're like, we don't really know, but we can tell you someone that we love. And they named the same person. And so Nick is like, okay. So the third location, fourth location, fifth location, exact same response every time. Finally, at the fifth location, he's like, he said he folded his arms. He said, I'm not leaving here until you tell me, why do you love this guy? And they stop and they think for a moment. And then it says they leaned across the table and they looked him straight in the eye. They pointed their fingers out. We'll tell you why we love him. We love him because he borrows money from us. And Nick was like, he borrows money from us? What does that got to do with it? Like, I could do that, right? Like, and he's like, there had to be more to the story. So he asked him, and in his conversation with him, comes to find out this Christian worker from the West was living in this country. His father died. I don't think he was from the United States, maybe from England. I'm not sure. His father died, and he didn't have enough money to go back for his father's funeral. What would you do in a situation like that? We'd call a mission board, or we'd call our parents or our friends or something. He didn't do that. He went to the local people, the local church. They knew the story. They heard about it. He borrowed money from them to go back home for his father's funeral. And then the workers went on to tell Nick, he's like, later on, after he came back, he had been helping us so much that he didn't have enough money to send his children to school. So we took an offering among our churches, and we helped him send his, give him the money to send his children to school. He said, the reason we love him is because he needs us. The rest of you workers have never needed us. You come in with your programs, you come in with your money, you come in with your churches, you come in with everything, and you don't need us. And you expect us to sit there and just take it all in and receive all this stuff. But the reason we love him is, paraphrased, because he's humble enough to recognize that he needs us. Humility, I maintain, is a number one character quality that you need if you're going to communicate the gospel cross-culturally in a way that will be received. But that's not easy. That goes against everything we have. It's like, I'm supposed to be the one who has the answers. I'm supposed to be the one who has it together. It takes humility to recognize that we need the local people and that we don't have everything together. Second one I'd like to look at in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, it gives several descriptions of love, and it uses the word patience, or depending on your translation, maybe long-suffering. Patience, I think, is also vital in communicating cross-culturally. Everything basically in the United States, everything runs on time, including this topic. We start on time, we end on time, or we're supposed to. Everything runs on time. You go into another culture with that mentality, you potentially will have a problem. If you go to Germany, maybe you'll be okay, but you go to the Caribbean or you go to Asia, you will have a problem. It used to be, growing up as a teenager, if I told you I was going to be here at 3 o'clock, that meant 10 till 3. Like, in my mind, if I showed up here at 3 o'clock, I was late. At least 10 minutes early. Grenada fixed that pretty quickly. But unfortunately, not without frustration. I would get sometimes so frustrated, like, why can't these people be on time? I would go try to pick up people for church, and they'd be late. You know, if I'm impatient, I might not say a word, but it's written all over my face. What does that do for communicating the gospel? I show that I'm frustrated, and then I try to preach a sermon on love or something at church when we get there, right? It doesn't work. A lot of other cultures are much more event-based than time-based. Learning patience, I think, is really vital in being able to communicate cross-culturally, and especially if you want to communicate the gospel, because if you're impatient, you will create barriers pretty quickly. Soon after we moved to New York, a Muslim friend of mine, he's from Bangladesh, he wanted me to help him buy a mattress. His English wasn't the greatest, and we were going to I didn't know where we were going, but I found out we're going to a Chinese store, and their English wasn't the greatest. And so between me kind of being the mediator between both of their, or the translator between, but not mediator, translator between both of their Englishes, we were going to go buy this mattress. So we set a day. It was going to be like Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, and it was the next week is the day that we had set. I forgot about it until 10 till 9 that morning. I'm downstairs working, and all of a sudden I looked at the clock and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm supposed to be down on Broadway, which is at least a 10-minute walk away. I'm supposed to be there in 10 minutes, and I had at least 5 minutes to wrap up what I was doing before I could leave. So I quickly stopped what I was doing. I ran down there. I didn't walk. I ran down there so I could hurry up and get there by 9 o'clock, the time that we had set. And my friend's not there. I started looking around, and I looked in the store. He wasn't in the store. I looked in the, up and down the sidewalk. He wasn't there. So I was like, okay. About 9:15, I called him. I was like, we're meeting today at 9, right? And he's like, yeah, he's coming. I think he was just getting ready. I'm not sure. And he lived about 20 minutes away. Finally, about 9:45, he shows up. And I took the time by watching people. I was reading the menus, and you can buy like swan's tongue at some of the Chinese restaurants up there, and pork stomach and some other stuff. But anyway, I found that out while I was waiting for him. He shows up at 9:45. He doesn't apologize for being late. He just kind of shows up, and we go into the place to buy this mattress, and we get through the transaction. He's buying two mattresses. And then the lady's like, oh, actually, they're not here. They're at the warehouse down the street. So we go out and we walk down. And I had other stuff I was going to do that day, but this time, I don't even know what time it is by this time. So we get down the street and we go to the warehouse. And then the guy's like, oh, I'm so sorry. The mattresses aren't here. They're on the truck. They're going to come. They'll be here in like 30 minutes. And my friend mutters under his breath, man, 30 minutes, that's a long time to wait. And I'm thinking, yeah, I just waited 45 minutes on you. Maybe in his mind, if they told him 30 minutes, that was like 2 or 3 hours. I don't know what he interpreted that to mean. So we wait there for a while. And eventually in a conversation, we're like, okay, well, the truck's not coming right now. So they'll deliver him to his apartment. So fine, I go back home and I get on with the rest of my day. That evening, he calls me and he was like, actually, they only brought one, and he decided that he doesn't need the other one after all. So would I go with him the next day back to the store to return, like to get credit for the one that wasn't delivered? So I was like, okay, fine. So we arranged that, and I'll continue that story a little later on. So just the whole idea of learning patience, if you go into another culture with our time frame mentality, and you take that to another culture, you will probably have problems. Even in New York, you can have problems if you're not willing to be patient. Our church seldom starts on time. I'm okay with that. We have a very multicultural church. It's not very big, 40, 45 people. But it almost never starts on time. 10 minutes late is fairly common. But then the flip side, the good side to it, is if we have Sunday school at the end, if we're in a good discussion, we can run 30 minutes late, and the only ones who are complaining are just like Caucasians, like me, right? Everyone else is good with this because we're having a good time. We're having a good discussion, and we have coffee and snacks afterwards, so we don't have to rush home for lunch. Lunch is maybe at 2 o'clock if we're fortunate. Patience. I think America, actually I heard this from Merle Burkholder. He says North America or the United States is the only country that has a mountain called Mount Rushmore because we're always rushing from one thing to the next. Is it okay if things don't actually start and stop on time? And I put that in quotes. Some say yes. It depends on what culture you're in, right? If you try that in America too many times, you might have a problem if you're always late. You'll find the bus left without you. You'll find that church or the event started without you. But learn patience, because patience is communicated all through our body language, or a lack of patience will certainly be communicated. And if we have impatience written all over us, it will be communicated. I think I need to hurry up here a little bit. The next one that I want to look at is kindness. And that says love is kind. Love suffers long, or love is patient, and love is kind. Now, I substituted this one just a little bit. When you want to communicate cross-culturally, find out what is the norm for common courtesy. So if you want to be kind, or what is the normal for common courtesy? I'll use that term instead, but you can also call it kindness. So if you're greeting someone, what is expected? Is cross-gender greetings, are those okay? Like if I greet a woman, is that okay? Or do I not greet a woman? If I look him in the eye, is that okay? Or should I not look them in the eye? Like what is expected? How can I be viewed as being kind? We can be very rude thinking that we're actually being very good. Going up and say, hi, my name is Joel, and I shake your hand. In some cultures, you don't do that. Not with someone that you just first met or hadn't met before. So what is culturally expected? I had a friend in another country, and in that particular country, it was very important that you would say good morning or good afternoon to someone before you start talking with them. Like you would say good morning, and then you could talk. You could basically butt in line or cut in line as long as you said good morning first. Like that good morning basically trumped everything. So my friend worked on, he was a from that particular country. He did construction work, and he's out on this construction job, and they're doing a project for this lady from England who were not in England. And one day the boss, the owner of the construction company, comes back to my friend who was the foreman. He was like, what's going on? This owner, the lady, is saying that you're not talking with her. And he's like, well, she's not saying good morning. She'll come out and she'll just say, you know, like, oh, we need to move this pile of lumber, or what are you doing that? And so he's like, she's not saying good morning to me. I'm not talking to her. She didn't understand what was expected. And sometimes we can be viewed as being rude as well, thinking that we're being really polite. I have another friend who owned a shop. He lived in another country. He was a citizen, native of that country. He had a shop there, and one day I was talking with him, and he was like, Pastor Joel, you need to talk to, and he names a particular missionary. And I was like, why? What's he done wrong? Like, I could tell by the tone of his voice, like, something was wrong. He's like, this guy is so selfish. And in that particular country, selfish meant like he keeps to himself, like he doesn't, like, rude really is the term. And I was like, why? What's he doing? And he's like, well, he'll come into my shop, and he won't say good morning to us, and so I was like, there's got to be more to this story, because I knew this other particular person, and I'm like, he's not a rude person. Like, he's very gracious, very quiet, very, very nice guy. And so I found that there was more to the story, yes. So he'd come into the shop, and my Grenadian friend is he owns a shop, he's behind the counter, and he's there talking with his buddies. My American friend would come in, and he doesn't want to be rude and interrupt the conversation, so he just waits until their conversation's done. He's like, you know, I'd like a bag of rice, a pound of flour, whatever he wants, and he goes his way. He wasn't saying good morning. Like, in that particular culture, you needed to say good morning. And I felt sorry for my American friend, because he was trying his best to be polite. Like, we don't interrupt conversations, right? Except maybe when you're at reach, when you're flying by someone, you say, hey, how you doing? And then you can keep on, but... What is culturally expected? Some cultures are very different. So the mattress story, right? The next day, I go back with my friend to the store to return this mattress. I knew they opened at 9 o'clock. So we go down there, and we're going to try to be there. My friend was actually there at 9 o'clock that time. So we go into the store, first people in right after they opened up. And just as we come into the store at the far end, it's just a little shop, at the far end of the shop, the lady is there, and she's burning incense to her idol, and she's kind of wowing, she's bowing down. I said good morning when we stepped in, and then she waited. She finished her little ritual. Then she turns around, and she comes back, and it's like, okay, so what do we want? And it's like, oh, like we explained that the one mattress wasn't delivered, and he changed his mind. He doesn't need that one after all. He just liked to return, like to get his money back for that one. And she's like, oh, no, you can't do that. Like, you're the first customer of the day. Like, you can't return something the first person of the day. Like, that'll bring bad luck for the whole day. Come back this afternoon. And it's like, I could have said, wait a minute, miss, this is New York City. Like, this is the United States of America, last I checked. Like, I can return something anytime I want unless you have a policy that I can't, like, all sales final. And there's no sign posted like that. I was like, no, I'm sorry, miss. We'll come back this afternoon. So we leave. We come back at 2 o'clock that afternoon, return the mattress, no problem. Everything's fine. But I had to understand where she was coming from. I could have forced my point. Don't. Go with the flow. Learn what is expected. How can I be kind in a particular country? So you go into another culture. Maybe you have visitors over. Let's say that you're in another culture, or you're interacting with people from other cultures, and you invite them to your house. What's expected? Should you offer them something as soon as they come in? Should you offer them a glass of water, a cup of juice? What is expected? Or if someone shows up at mealtime, let's actually reverse this. Let's say you're in another culture. You're in another culture, and someone shows up at mealtime. What do you do? What do you do in this culture when someone shows up at mealtime? Usually you delay the meal until they're gone, and you hope they leave pretty quickly, and then we eat. Depending on what culture you're in, actually, I timed my visit so I would show up to their house at mealtime, because I knew that in that culture, if I would do that, they would just add one more plate. This is great. Like, we have company, so we add one more plate, and everyone gets just a little bit less, but everyone gets food, and we have a good time of fellowship. What's expected when people show up at your house, or when you show up at someone else's house? If you are the visitor, should you take a gift along? How are you going to be viewed as, how are you going to find these things out? How are you going to find out what's expected in another culture? Ask, yes, go in and ask them. But that takes humility, right? It demonstrates that I don't know all the answers. I know how I did it in my culture, but I don't know how they do it in this culture. I don't know how you do it here. Can you teach me? That's demonstrating humility again, and it's learning how to show kindness or how to show what is expected in that particular culture. How do you say no in another culture? Depends on what culture you're in. Growing up, I was taught that no meant no. Like, don't ask again. I told you no. No means no. Some cultures, you have to say yes the first time. Or maybe you have to say no the first time, depending on the way the question's asked. Would you like to go out to dinner with us? Oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that. Oh, okay, great. So they don't want to go. So then we go. Unfortunately, there are people that come to the United States. It's one story of a college student or an exchange student was here for a number of years. I forget how many years. And she didn't have any friends. And she was like, I don't understand. Like, I just don't have any friends. And they're like, well, what's wrong? She was here a number of years before she realized that if you asked her, would you like to go out to dinner, that we actually mean if she wants to go, she should say yes. In her culture, she's like, oh, no, you don't want to go. And then you'd ask in her culture, you'd ask again the second time, no, really, we want you to come. It's like, oh, no, I wouldn't want to intrude on that. After the third or fourth time, then she would say yes, but she wanted to say yes all along, but her culture wouldn't let her say yes. Okay, so how do you say no? So you go to another culture. I was in India with Raymond Burkholder. I was just there for a week. They had tremendous food. I love their food there. So this is great. Like, I look forward to mealtime, and we're having food, and they had given me this great big plate of food, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of food. I don't know if I can eat all that. But I would eat it because it was really good. I loved it. And then they'd see my plates empty, and they'd give me a whole bunch more food. And I'd be like, nah, I'm okay. Before they give me, I was like, nah, it's okay. But they give me more. I was like, I really do like it. So yeah, it's great. And I'm starting to get a little uncomfortable after the second big plate full. And then it's like, you want some more? I'm like, no, I really don't want any more. And they'd give me a big plate full again. I'm like, oh, I love the food, okay? It was really, really good. But by this time, I'm really uncomfortable. So I asked, I was like, later on, outside of the mealtime, I was like, how do I say no? Like, I told him no twice. It's like, okay, so eat one plate full of food. And okay, let me add insult to this. The coordinator leans over to me the one time and is like, Pastor Joel, I've seen six-year-olds eat more than this. And I'm thinking, I don't know how, but... So I asked them later on, it's like, how do you say no? It's like, the first time, say no, but you really want more. That's great. The second time, if you really, like, you can say no again. But when you really mean no, like, you put your hands, you say no and put your hands over the plate, and then they won't give you more. So, like, the next time, I'm going to try this. So, good food again, as always. First plate full is great. Nah, you want more? Nah, I'm okay. They give me more. That's fine. That's what I wanted. The second plateful is getting done, and you want some more? Nah, it's really good, but and they'd give me more anyway. Then it was like when I really am finished, I was like, no, and I said, I'm going to try this, and I put my hands on the plate. It worked. They know how to say no, but just as different than the way I grew up. So every culture, you can say no, you can say yes, but learn how. So learn what is kind or what is accepted in that culture. The fourth one that I'm going to look at is not taken from 1 Corinthians 13. Have a non-judgmental attitude. And I'm not meaning tolerance that everything goes. I'm not talking about accepting sin. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like on a cultural level, when you go into another culture, don't immediately go in judging, oh, this is right and wrong. We tend to put things in two categories, right and wrong. There's actually a third one that's just called different. And we need that third category because there's a lot of things that are not right or wrong, not in and of themselves. They're just different. So if someone offers you pig snout to eat, not to throw away, to eat, is that right, wrong, or different? I think it's right. I like pig snout, by the way. But it is certainly different. I had two boys look at a plate of food one time. They were in another country. One looks at his plate of food, and he looks at his friend's plate of food, and he said, a new way to commit suicide. I disagreed with him. The food was different from what they were used to, but it was not wrong. It was just different. So how do you know what category to put these things in? I'm saying we're not to be judgmental, but we do have to assign them to one of these three categories. So let's say the Buddhist religion. Is it right, wrong, or different? It's wrong. Why do you say that? I agree with you, by the way. I do want to be invited back sometime. We look at the Bible. The Bible determines what category, if it's right or wrong. If it's neither right or wrong, it just goes in the different category. If you drive on the left-hand side of the road, is that right, wrong, or different? It's different. It just depends on what country you're in. If you're in this country, it's wrong. If you're in Grenada, it's right. But in terms of our way of thinking, it's just different. How much time do I have left? I totally lost track of time. 10 minutes? Okay. So don't go into another culture with a judgmental attitude. We could look at that a lot of different ways. I mean, a lot of different applications of that. But be careful that you go in and you're not judging immediately. Well, because they build houses differently than I do, therefore it's wrong, or this is weird. And I've heard people say that so many times. They come in with a judgmental attitude, like, this is just plain wrong. Like, actually, it's not wrong. If you understand why they do it that way, it actually makes sense. But it's different than the way we're used to it because it's a different setting. It's not in the United States, not in Virginia where I grew up. Another character quality that I would like to look at is in verse 5 of 1 Corinthians 13, slow to anger. Be very careful. I don't know if it's a character quality or not, but being slow to anger is really, really important if you want to be able to communicate any time, but especially across cultures. You go into another culture and things are different than the way you're used to. It's easy to get angry at, well, why don't they just get on with the program here? Maybe their way of playing basketball is different than yours. Grenadian basketball was quite a bit different. I think there were such things as fouls, but they weren't very common. If you were quicker than them and you managed to get by, you're quicker on the dribble, you could get by them, and a foot might come out accidentally and trip you. I could jump up and get really upset. Like, that just tore a hole in my almost new pants. Like, we can get angry, but if you get angry, it will separate people. It'll put up barriers real quickly. Let's say it's not on the game of basketball, but people are maybe making fun of you for something. You're trying to learn another language. Our daughter was in Mexico. She's trying to learn Spanish, and she has a pretty good grasp on it now, but before she learned more, she was trying to ask for something, and she asked for a roach. Would they please pass the roach instead of passing the fork? She didn't want a roach. It's easy to kind of get frustrated when people laugh at you. Ha, look at them. She asked for a roach. You can laugh at your mistakes. That's going to be a whole lot more beneficial than getting angry. I love playing softball. Haven't played as much lately, but especially growing up, I really enjoyed playing softball. When we moved to Grenada, they played cricket. They didn't play softball there. Completely different. You have a ball and a bat, and the similarities end about there. But I love playing cricket, except for batting. I hated batting because it was so different than softball. And one of the biggest insults in cricket is if you get out without scoring any runs. Like a good cricketer will score 100 runs or more before getting out. It's different than softball. I could explain later. But anyway, I knew that when it was my turn to bat, the chances of me getting bowled out were pretty high. And the chances of getting bowled out without scoring a run were also very high. They had a term for that. It was called a duck. You didn't want a duck. It was like bad. I knew my turn to bat. I love bowling or pitching. I love fielding, but I hated batting. So I'm there batting. I'm getting ready to bat. And the ball comes in and it bounces and does all sorts of funny things. And I'd get bowled out, sure enough. And the boys would walk around and they'd go like, quack, 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 like a duck, right? I wanted to get angry. It's like, look, let's go play softball. That's a real game with a ball and a bat. I'll show you how. I can hit a ball, right? Or I could laugh with them. It's like, I knew it was going to happen. I'm sorry. It's a fortunate thing that everyone on the team has to get out before the inning is or the half inning is over. It's not as big a deal as in a softball game, an out isn't. But I learned to laugh with them when a mistake came. Learn to laugh at your mistakes. Learn to be okay when you do things that aren't the way that you wanted them to turn out. Be slow to anger. It's very, very important. Another thing, I don't know if this is really another character quality. I think it's a character quality, an eagerness to learn. Go in, ask questions. Ask lots of questions. Go in with an attitude of a learner. I maintain that you have to demonstrate that you're willing to learn before you earn the right to teach. You can go in as a missionary, if you will, and there's a certain amount of respect that will be given you because of your position or because of your title. But the more that you demonstrate that I want to learn how you do things in this culture, the more you will earn their respect and the more you earn the right to teach. An eagerness to learn. Learn their history. Ask them what their holidays, why do you have holidays here? What is this holiday about? Why do we go fly kites on Easter Monday or Good Friday? This is Grenada. The response I got the one time, I'm pretty sure was not the right answer. It was a Rasta man. I was like, so why in Grenada? Why do you go fly kites on Good Friday? Some cultures, you go to church on Good Friday. My wife is from Ontario. She was used to going to church on Good Friday. So Rasta man, he thinks for a bit and he's like, I don't know, because Jesus was flying on the cross. I don't think that's why they flew kites on Good Friday, but I was trying to find out, why do you do that? Learn how to cook their food. Why do you put this stuff in your food? Why do you put pig snout and oil down? Why do you put these seasonings here? Why do you prepare your food this way? Why do you build your houses that way? Why don't you do it this way? Ask questions. An eagerness to learn, I think, is a quick way to get into a culture. Over all of these, have a genuine love for the people. If you have a genuine love, in 1 Corinthians 13, it says you can have everything else, but if you don't have love, yeah, you've lost it. And I maintain that in communicating cross-culturally, it's the same way. If you don't have a genuine love for people, they will sense that really quickly. They'll know if you're just there putting in time, so you can pat yourself on the back and say, I did my job, now I can go back home and get on with life, or if you really care about them. And I guarantee you that if you really care about them, you will have their respect. And then when you do make a duck in cricket, or when you do have things that you unintentionally have cultural blunders, they will be much quicker to overlook that because they can sense that you do love them. I had time and again where I had to go back and say, I'm sorry. Like, I blew it. I didn't know, or I knew and I intentionally did wrong, or whatever the reason. I went back and said, I'm sorry. But overall, when we were in Grenada, the people knew that we loved them and they loved us. And we belonged there. We felt that connection there. In New York, it's the same. The love that we have in our church. I got to share this story yet from the church. There's a Chinese lady who comes to church occasionally. She doesn't come very often. She's not a believer. And one of the first times she came to church, she was like, are all of you related here? And like, we had about I don't know that particular Sunday, but often we'll have up to 10 countries represented. No, we're not all related. She's like, but it feels like one big family. Like there's this love for each other. And then she said, and when I'm here, I feel like I'm part of that family too. That's a genuine love for people. And that's not coming from me. That's coming from God. And as we have a genuine love for people, we'll be able to overlook cultural blunders, or they will overlook some of the cultural blunders that we have. Paul says you could have everything all perfect. You can have the perfect language learning ability. You can have the perfect mission statement, the perfect vision, the perfect plan. But if you don't have a genuine love for people, you're going to miss it. And you're not going to be able to communicate well. You're not going to be able to communicate effectively in a cross-cultural setting. Humility, patience, kindness, non-judgmental, slow to anger, an eagerness to learn, covered by a genuine love for people, I believe are some essential character qualities that we need if we're going to communicate the gospel cross-culturally. I have about 1 minute left. Does anyone have any questions yet? I was going to give you opportunity earlier. I talked too much. Thank you. Okay, got one slipped in here and then another one over here. Yes.
How do you say that that is wrong as in true? How do you...
Always come back to the Bible. When demonstrate first that you're willing to learn, and God works in different orders in people. In other words, some of the things that we see in Scripture, other cultures might not see, but then they see things in Scripture that our culture doesn't see. We can talk afterwards some specifics on that. But demonstrate that you want to learn, but then always go back to the Bible. The Bible says this. This is not my culture says this, but the Bible says this, so always go back to the Bible. I think we need to speak truth, absolutely. When I'm saying non-judgmental, I'm not meaning overlooking sin. We go back to the Bible. But as you have a relationship with them, they will listen much quicker than if you just come charging in and saying, the Bible says this, and there's no relationship built with them. One question over here.
Yeah, I like the call to become an expert in the culture, to understand it. What about when you're in a setting where there's just New York City or where there's multicultural? How do you become an expert in...
I'm still learning. How do you become an expert in a multicultural setting like New York City? I try to filter at first, who am I talking with or who am I relating to? Chinese culture is different from Bengali culture, but then I still don't know if they're relating to me from American culture or from their own culture. So it gets a tricky way. We can talk more. I'm out of time on that. I don't really know, and I'm not an expert on this, by the way. I'm still learning. Thank you. Hang on for a minute. A couple announcements yet, but thanks for coming.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.